40 greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
What we do, people don't quite see it. So you have to enjoy it. You have to believe in it. And you have to work hard for it. And when you get given that chance, you've got to make most of it. And it has happened, but it's been hard work. And when I start to believe myself and you go in as a different athlete, you go in as go and do it. And then year after year to have that pressure, it gets harder. It might not show it, but it does get harder. It weighs more. And always having target your back is it's never an easy thing. Over the 6-7 years to do what I did, just looking back, it's been incredible. And now I'm finally to say this is it. Track, everything must come to end some point, and what a career I've had.
That's Mo Farah, Britain's 4-time Olympic champion, whose track career came to an end in thrilling and victorious fashion in Zurich, Switzerland. In a wild 4-man finish in the men's 5,000 meters race, Farah avenged his world championship loss earlier this month to Ethiopia's Mukhtar Idris, who fell over the finish line. Only 13 one-hundredths of a second separated the first 4 men in the IAAF Diamond League race in Zurich. At the IAAF website, reporter Bob Ramsack wrote, Farah fought valiantly down the final straight, fighting off or charging back every move his opponents threw his way, sprinting towards the line, eyeballs out and grimacing. Farah held firm, even in the blanket finish, to take the win in 13 minutes and 6.05 seconds. Mo Farah narrowly beat Mukhtar Idris and Kenya-born Paul Chelimo, who won a silver medal for the United States at 5,000 meters at last year's Rio Olympics in Brazil. Now, Chelimo was later disqualified for obstruction during the frantic and bunched-up finish in Zurich. 34-year-old Mo Farah was born in Mogadishu, Somalia, and he moved to Britain at the age of 8. In addition to those 4 Olympic gold medals, Farah has won 6 world titles. Mo says he'll now go to the roads and focus on the marathon distance.
But I want to go into the road and see what I can learn on the road, and I think it's going to same transition it's going to take in terms of doing one, learning from it, improving it, working out what body can do and can't do. And the quicker you realize and the quicker you honest yourself, the quicker you move forward. And I think that's the key. And secondly, just go in there as a new man, fresh and with expectation and target on my back, I guess.
Where does Mo Farah rank among the greats of long distance running? That's the question I posed to our longtime track analyst, the energetic Andy Edwards.
Well, I think in this modern age with TV, video, all the kind of media, social media, sometimes people can look back 5 years, 10 years, and really when we're talking about all-time greats or who is the greatest, you really have to go back now. It's coming up to about 100 years. So certainly, Mo Farah, his achievements, well, he won the 10,000 metres in London. That was a bruising race. He had to show that he was tough in terms of making sure he had a clear run. And then didn't quite have enough in the 5,000, beaten. He had to settle for silver behind Ethiopia's Mukhtar Idris. Now, Farah, day in, day out, would reckon he would beat Idris, but this was not to be. I think a bit like Usain Bolt, maybe Mo Farah, this was and is his last track season before he concentrates completely on the marathon. It showed. I mean, still a wonderful performer, but it showed. When I think back, As you know, Sonny, I live in North London. It's close to Hampstead Heath, where there are lots of cross-country races. And I remember years ago seeing the young, and he must have been a schoolboy, Mo Farah, run in a cross-country race on the Heath. And it's a very hilly course, and sometimes if you're new to the course, you might go the wrong way. And he was in the lead, and he went the wrong way. And the officials were waving him back to come back. And then, of course, he won. Now, I didn't know I was looking at one of the all-time greats when I saw him as a schoolboy. And in 2009, when he was in the final of the 10,000 metres in Berlin, he did well, but he wasn't among the medals. And I thought that was a tremendous performance. What he's done since from, shall we say, 2011 onwards, he got a gold and silver, the world champs. Then in London 2012, he got that Olympic double, 5 and 10,000 metres. And that set everything off on fantastic performances, 10 gold medals included. I thought, where's this come from? Now, Mo Farah and his coach Alberto Salazar would say the move to the USA, he got all the details of training, preparation right, and he learnt from before he moved, from staying in a house with Kenyan runners, high-quality Kenyan runners in southwest London, in Teddington, living and training with them. He learnt about discipline and rest and how hard training had to be. He's achieved greatness alongside Lasse Virran, who won a double, Olympic double, 5 and 10 from Finland in 1972, and then 76 again, and another great Finn in the 1920s, Paavo Nurmi. Then you come to more modern day, Haile Gebrselassie.
Hello, this is Haile Gebrselassie. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
His success on the track, beating Paul Tergat. And then, of course, Kenenisa Bekele. And both Haile and Kenenisa have since switched to the marathon. Haile broke the world marathon record. Kenenisa, if he stays injury-free, looks as if he could. I think, to really sum it up, Mo Farah isn't quite, I would say, yet at the level of Haile Gebrselassie and Kenenisa Bekele, especially Haile, because they both have moved to the marathon. Haile broke the world record, although he never ran a championship marathon. So that's one, if you put it in inverted commas, strike against Haile, nor has Kenenisa. Kenenisa may still have time to run a championship marathon. So we'll see what Mo Farah has done, or will do rather, in the marathon. He ran 2 hours 8 minutes on his debut in London in 2014. That was good, not as good as some people expected, but both Haile, Kenenisa and Paul Tergat of Kenya have said most people, even people as good as they are, have to serve a marathon apprenticeship. It may be Mo Farah has to serve that apprenticeship. And I think, just on a kind of news content, when we're talking about surveys and research, the ongoing investigation into the coaching of Alberto Salazar and if he has crossed any line in terms of performance enhancing, given that Mo Farah is still theoretically one of his athletes, they seem to be more distant these days, but it does seem that Salazar is still passing on advice to Mo Farah, then that is a question still to be resolved. And indeed, Mo Farah, the day after the 5,000 metres in London, gave a press conference and he accused some sections of the UK press of conducting a witch hunt against him.
It's like, I achieve what I have achieved and then you're trying to destroy it.
I wouldn't agree with that. I don't consider it a witch hunt. You know, if you're a journalist, sometimes you have to ask hard questions. And Farah said, you've got to realise how hard I work. I think everybody would appreciate how hard he must work, but that doesn't answer the question. So it's another one of those questions in world athletics at present, which is not going to go away any day soon.
Thanks, Andy. That's the energetic Andy Edwards in London. Reporter Samson Omale joins us now with some of the African highlights from that IAAF Diamond League meet in Zurich, as well as other sports news. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. We begin in Zurich, Switzerland, where the first of two 2017 IWAF Diamond League finals took place on Thursday night. It was a good night for Africa as Timothy Cheruiyot led a top six finish for Kenya in the 1,500 meters, holding off Silas Kiplagat and world champion Elijah Mutunei Mangangoi down the home stretch to win in 3 minutes 33.93 seconds. In the long jump event, two South African athletes wrapped up unbeaten seasons as Luvo Mayonga closed out a dominant campaign in the men's long jump with the world champion producing a best leap of 8.49 meters in the fourth round to finish comfortably clear of second place compatriot Roshwa Samai with an 8.31 meters leap. In the women's 800 meters race, Caster Semenya sat back for most of the contest before kicking on to win in 1 minute 55.84 seconds. She became the first South African athlete to successfully defend a Diamond League Series title. Her nearest opponent, Francine Niyonsaba of Burundi, was 0.87 meters off the pace in second position as Semenya dragged a total of six women under 1 minute 58 seconds. In rugby news, ahead of the return leg of the Kenya-Hong Kong test tie, the National 15's rugby team technical bench has gone for experience in naming their squad. Unlike the team featuring six test double tour that drew with Hong Kong 1919 last Sunday, the squad named sees most of those who took part in the African Gold Cup recalled. Wangila Simiu is team manager.
We expect a lot of high level intensity in the first 20 minutes of the game.
From rugby to cricket news, South African captain Faf du Plessis will lead a World 11 side that will play three matches in Lahore, Pakistan next month. In boxing news, George Foreman Jr., son of former world heavyweight champion George Foreman, is in Nigeria. Part of his plans in Nigeria, he explains, is to set up a boxing league in Africa's most populous nation.
I want to move here, be here every 2 months to develop stars in Nigeria, wow, and all of Africa, all of it. So you talked about Ndongo. No one knew him when he came to the States. When some great Nigerian talent comes to the States, they don't know them. So I want to say, you know what? Let's create a market here, make them stars here. And nobody else wants to do it, so guess what? My father taught me hard work. Here I am.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
In Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me, I'm Heather Maxwell, for Music Time in Africa, every Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 2000 and 2100 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Carol. We look forward to your next Press Conference USA show. Turning to tennis, the year's final Grand Slam event, the U.S. Open, begins Monday in New York. The top seed on the men's side is Rafael Nadal of Spain. Andy Murray of Britain is seeded second, and veteran Swiss star Roger Federer is seeded third. Roger celebrated his 36th birthday earlier this month, but he's defied Father Time in 2017, having already won two major trophies at Wimbledon and the Australian Open this year. On the women's side, Czech player Karolina Pliskova is the top seed at a major tournament for the first time in her career after claiming the number one spot in the women's rankings at Wimbledon. The 25-year-old Pliskova has never won a Grand Slam singles title. Her best Grand Slam showing was last year at the U.S. Open when she lost to Germany's Angelique Kerber in the final. The number two seed on the women's side is Romania's Simona Halep, and the number three seed is Spanish player Garbiñe Muguruza, who lifted the trophy this year at Wimbledon and last year at the French Open. During Thursday's Sunny Side of Sports, tennis writer Giddy Nathan of Deadspin.com told my VOA colleague Andrew Palcheski that Muguruza is one of his favorites to win at the U.S. Open, especially with Serena Williams not playing because of pregnancy. This evening, Andrew Palcheski and Giddy Nathan will focus on the top men at the U.S. Open. Here's Andrew.
Over on the men's side, we see actually a lot of symmetry with the women's side. You have several big-name men missing. In fact, the last two men to win the U.S. Open, Novak Djokovic and Stan Wawrinka, will both be out of this tournament. So does that open up the field for young players like Alexander Zverev, who won the City Open here in D.C.? He won the Rogers Cup in Montreal. Maybe Nick Kyrgios or Grigor Dimitrov, the two finalists in the Cincinnati Open.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of this season has so far felt like a constant battle between Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. But Federer is finally showing some signs of physical weakness. He had a few back issues that took him out of his final in Montreal versus Alex Zverev and then caused him to withdraw from Cincinnati. So assuming that he won't be able to bounce back to his dominant form that he was carrying earlier this season, he may not be as big a threat in the U.S. Open as we expected. And Rafael Nadal has still looked great, but admittedly beatable, losing pretty surprising fashion to the 18-year-old Canadian Denis Shapovalov, which is a great match, and then more recently losing to Nick Kyrgios in one of the best matches he's played in a while. So these young players are proving that they can make a little bit of headway in the summer hard court season against these great players. So I think we've got to look out, especially see how Alexander Zverev, 20-year-old German, will do, given that he has never made it to the quarterfinal of a major before. Despite all his success in a best-of-three format, he has yet to translate that to a Grand Slam. So we'll have to see.
And aside from the players who are not participating, like Novak Djokovic and Stan Wawrinka, there are some players that are kind of on the cusp of not being 100%, but still likely to play. Andy Murray, Marin Cilic,
right.
Milos Raonic. Could any of those players surprise us, or do you think that they're going to fall out early because of their injuries?
Some of the phrasing I saw around Andy Murray's U.S. Open chances made me feel a little pessimistic about his odds playing well in New York. He did look really hurt in Wimbledon in his final match against Sam Querrey there. It was visibly difficult for him to get through the match, and you have to wonder how quickly he can recover from that kind of hip injury. Also, Marin Cilic will be a guy to watch.
And you mentioned earlier Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. It's really been their year, especially as far as the major tournaments have gone. In fact, those are the two men that have won all three of the majors so far this year. Federer winning Australia and Wimbledon, Nadal winning his 10th French Open. Could either of them find success at the U.S. Open, or will the injuries weigh them down?
Yeah, again, almost the default expectation at this point is that one of those two will be lifting the major trophies. That's kind of been the narrative of the year. And with that expectation, I would not be remotely surprised if either of them ended up winning or if we even got to see them play each other in a final. But I think that compared to the previous three majors of the year, there's a lot of opportunity for a younger player to break through. Potentially you see a first-time major winner. Could be someone, as you mentioned, like Grigor Dimitrov, who the kind of player who's been compared a lot to Federer in the past in the style of play, but who has yet to achieve that kind of success. So he's 26 now, just had the biggest title win of his career in Cincinnati, and it'll be really interesting to see if his talent, which is very serious talent, can finally pay off in a major. And I think the field is just weak enough to allow for that, given that we've had Novak Djokovic, Stan Wawrinka, Ken Nishikori, a lot of these top 10 players bow out for the rest of the season with injuries. So the opportunity is definitely there for a first-time winner.
And given the weak field and that opportunity, do you see any wild cards, any of the names maybe we haven't mentioned so far?
I know a name that people are definitely interested in after his breakout tournament in Montreal is the Canadian Denis Shapovalov. I think that there's still a lot of ifs surrounding his talent, but he looks like he's going to have a very bright future, if not necessarily an overly strong major performance. Another player that's sort of raised expectations recently is Francis Tiafoe, the 20-year-old American who had a nice win over Alexander Zverev in Cincinnati. I think a lot of people see him as the future of American tennis on the men's side, and it'll be really interesting to see how he has yet to sort of make much headway in a major. So he's a name to watch, particularly if you're interested in domestic, you know, U.S. tennis.
And TFO, too, not just for the U.S., but for the D.C. area, grew up right outside of Washington, D.C. and trained here, so it'd be really huge for the Washington, D.C. area as well. I'll ask you the same final question I asked you when we talked about the women. Who do you pick to win the U.S. Open on the men's side?
If it weren't for the injury concerns, I would have said Roger Federer without really blinking. But now I think it's a little more complicated question. I'd say on balance, I'm still going to go with him or Nadal.
That's Giddy Nathan, the tennis writer for Deadspin.com, picking either Roger Federer or Rafael Nadal to win the trophy at the U.S. Open. And Giddy was talking with my VOA colleague, Andrew Palcheski.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America.
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America.
Our Voice of America listeners can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. Archibald Peters, writing at my Facebook page, had a short message ahead of Saturday night's big Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight in Las Vegas, Nevada. Archibald said, "Trust me, Floyd will win. In Archibald, we trust." I'm also going with Floyd to notch his 50th career victory. And that wraps up the August 25th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Cornelius Tenner. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late 2014, ISIS was at the height of its power. They controlled what was effectively a quasi-state, said Brett McGurk, special presidential envoy for the Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS, at a press conference. They were able to mass and maneuver force all around Iraq and Syria, taking entire cities, controlling millions of people under their domain. In June 2014, ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi announced the formation of a caliphate in Iraq and Syria and declared himself the caliph. One of the reasons for ISIS' success was its broad and global appeal to foreign sympathizers. It preys on the minds of vulnerable and disaffected people around the world. It is a force of modern-day barbarism that seeks nothing less than the complete subjugation or destruction of all civilized people. It seeks to roll back centuries of progress on the rights and liberties of all human beings. Beginning in 2014, to date, about 40,000 foreign terrorist fighters from about 120 countries from around the world traveled into Syria and Iraq to join ISIS. To destroy the terrorist group, one of the areas the Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS had to focus on was to stop the influx of foreign terrorist fighters into Syria and seal the borders. They were coming by the thousands, and it's down at least by 90%, and we are not finding ISIS fighters being able to leave Syria, said Special Envoy McGurk. This decline, due in part to significant battlefield losses and an increasing number of desertions from ISIS ranks as fighters become disillusioned or return home, is making it harder for ISIS to replenish its ranks, and the number of ISIS fighters in Iraq and Syria has been reduced to the lowest levels in more than 2.5 years.
Not too long ago, what they would do is plan a terrorist attack in Raqqa. They would train a unit, kind of a terrorist combat unit. They would then infiltrate out. They would hang out in Monbij. They would then infiltrate out and go conduct an attack, such as in Paris or in the Brussels airport.
The caliphate is what drew so many of these foreign fighters to join ISIS and what makes it a global network, said Special Envoy McGurk. We think there are about 2,000 ISIS fighters left in Raqqa, and they will most likely die in Raqqa as forces continue to liberate the city.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondence reports around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.